throw balls far. You want good words? Data languager.
Talk real sports with a real man.
Come after me! I'm a man! I'm 40!
And now, here's the be-all, end-all, know-it-all of high school, college, and pro sports. Aaron Skinny Kalk with The Skinny on Sports.
We're talking about practice, man. I'm the MVP!
Good Tuesday morning out there, Western Oklahoma. Welcome to The Skinny on Sports, right here on 98.1 FM, the Sports Animal. Glad to have you along for the next hour. Going to get into all kinds of stuff. Regional assignments for Class A and B fast pitch and fall baseball were released probably Sunday night, but I noticed them yesterday afternoon. And I guess mainly we'll talk about where everybody's going, but I think the day and time might be inconsequential because of the rain that's coming in. I wonder how many of these are getting moved.
Well,
do you know of any?
As soon as they were released, and they were released yesterday, by the way.
Yeah, it was yesterday. Okay.
About mid-morning, probably right when we were done. I know, like, I had a schedule sent to me, and then it got me curious, well, where's everyone else going? So I went on, like, a couple hours later, and I already saw revised.
Yeah,
revised,
but it was still revised. Thursday.
It's still the same day, so they're probably but they were all pushed up by, like, 2 hours.
Yeah.
Like, the first one, like, around noon.
Yeah, a lot of those 2 o'clock, 4 o'clocks became noons and
yeah,
twos.
So that kind of made me think, or you know, that's just a guess. You've seen situations where coaches just get together and go, let's just play this. Let's just get this. We can get there by noon. Let's play this at noon, you know, because the travel isn't far or whatever. But I wouldn't doubt if the rain has something to do with it, sure.
Yeah, I'm wondering if we're not going to see a bunch more of those revised, mm-hmm. and not only just the times, but the days as I'm clicking on them.
Yeah.
Find that out. So we'll talk about that at the end of the show. And if you already know of something that's changing, tell us. 225-9698. Phone or text line, 225-9698. So no, there's supposed to be, there actually is rain in the forecast pretty much from, tonight through the rest of the week, or at least through Saturday.
Yeah, I'm so, missing my lawn. Thanks you, Mother Nature.
Mine doesn't.
Because my well's been broken, so I haven't been able to.
Oh, no.
Well, I got it fixed, so I had the sprinkler going this weekend, but it needed the rain, so we need some more. We need the water, so we need some more rain.
I was hoping it wasn't going to rain for another 2 weeks or three until it froze, and then I wouldn't have to worry about mowing again. That's what I was looking for. 225-9698 is the phone or the text line. If you got some changes to your team's regional for A and B fast pitch or fall baseball, let us know. We've got college football. I want you to create a pie chart. You know the old pie charts that we always had in school?
Yeah, school, yeah.
The pie chart, I want the pie chart of who's responsible and how much for Oklahoma's offensive problems. Huh. You know what I'm saying?
Okay.
So the biggest problem gets the biggest piece of the pie.
I have to draw this out.
Can it be fixed? Or does Lincoln Riley have to think about changing things up or even simplifying things for what he's got this year on offense? Was Saturday the leap that we've all been waiting on for Spencer Sanders? One of the best games he's ever played in OSU uniform. Who's your top 10 in college football? And also, who leads in the early Heisman race? If you had to name one right now, who would it be? Also, we'll wrap up the NFL weekend. Did we learn anything new? I mean, how about them Cowboys? Looking good. Looking good. Cautiously. You know what the Cowboys are for me? A lot like the Elks. Cautiously optimistic.
Good one. That's good.
Cautiously optimistic about the Cowboys. We'll have our top 5 in the NFL and our bottom 3 in the NFL as well. By the way, here you go. Leedy Regional Tournament at Leedy, which that is fall baseball, is now going to be played Wednesday and Thursday. A pick to follow of that bracket. So there you go. There's one that's changing up there in Leedy for the fall baseball Class B. Wednesday and Thursday instead of Thursday and Friday. All right, so the NFL weekend. It constantly delivers, man. The NFL, you look at the scores every single week, and a handful of games, a lot of times it's almost half of the games, end up one possession games where it comes right down to the end. There's field goals missed or made. You know, this week there was actually a little bit more separation in some of them, but, I mean, you have game winners in Atlanta. You had a game winner for the pack on the road, and then just the ridiculousness that was Detroit with Justin Tucker from an NFL record 66, doinking off the crossbar and through. I mean, Detroit, sorry.
That was maybe cursed. That was insane.
Maybe cursed there, Detroit. But you're not surprised that it was Justin Tucker that did it, because that dude is as good a kicker as we've ever seen, especially those long distance. How many long distance kicks has he made to win games in his career? It seems like 30. You know, it's probably not that many, but it seems like every other week Justin Tucker's not going in for 52 to rip somebody's heart out. This time 66. So what did you learn? Did you learn anything maybe that you didn't know, or maybe you saw something that really reinforced what you thought going in?
Can I give it up to myself? And I said Wilson was not going to be a good quarterback, or is that mainly because of where he's at the J-E-T-S, Jets?
It's hard to say it's not the Jets' fault when you see Sam Darnold looking like a competent NFL quarterback.
That's true, but Wilson just looks so bad. I mean, it's hard to see him in any other jersey and look any better, but that's the obvious answer. Chicago's horrible. It doesn't matter who's taking the snaps. They're bad. They got to do something about their offensive line. They got old guys on there, especially their left tackle. What's his name?
Yeah, and they tried.
It's just
what's bad for them is they tried to by drafting Tevin Jenkins, and then he got his back's hurt, and he had to have surgery, so he's out for the whole year.
Yeah.
So even when they try to do good, it goes bad.
Yeah. Buffalo, they're good. It was a little early when they lost to Steelers to say, oh, the Buffalo Bills are overrated and they're not. No, the offense showed up, and I think it's here to stay for the rest of the season after they walloped Washington. So, and then after last night, it's clear that the Cowboys are the favorite in the East. We knew that going in. I think a lot of people said that going in. They looked really, really good. And like I said, now I know we're really going to tackle this game in a little bit, but I said after they lost to Tampa Bay, they play like that. They could probably win their next eight leading up to Kansas City. And it's looking like that could be a possibility.
Yeah.
Sunday in general, though, just Sunday. Shoot, Sunday's noon games were the most entertained I've been in quite a long time. You had the kickoff, the missed field goal return from Jacksonville. They auburned. See what they burned them. They all burned Arizona. That was crazy. And like you mentioned, the Justin Tuck kick. It was just a lot of fun that first round of games. I didn't want to turn my TV off. Thank you, NFL Red Zone Channel.
Yeah, so, and the afternoon was great too.
Yeah,
with Miami and Las Vegas, that was just an awesome game.
Yes, going to overtime, of course.
Rams and Tampa was good.
Rams and Tampa Bay was awesome. And even the Sunday night primetime game, I mean, we are getting some good primetime games. I mean, last night was kind of a dud if you were not a Cowboy fan or any fan of the teams. But that Sunday night game was fun. But what have we learned? Is it too early to say that we've learned anything? It was 3 weeks through, and, I mean, have we learned anything? We got the two Super Bowl representatives going down. Are they overrated? Or is that a little exaggeration right there? You got Kansas City at 1-2. I'm telling you, Josh Gordon is going to change that.
He might.
Everyone's doing that. They're like, oh yeah, Josh Gordon's going to help us.
He might if he can stay on the field.
How long? Yeah, can he stay on the field? How long has it been since he's taken a meaningful snap?
It's been a while.
How often do we see that too? We see these guys that were good back then, they come back like, they've lost a step.
Yeah, but all you got to do is give a threat away from Tyreek Hill. That's the problem that Kansas City's offense has with stretching
it deep.
They
lock in on
Hill. Yeah, that's two games in a row now where Tyreek Hill has been taken away.
Right.
Now, Kelce's dominating in the middle of the field, but if you had to pick your poison against the Chiefs, you'd much rather dink and dunk with Kelce than have one play 75 from Tyreek.
Absolutely.
And so that's kind of a problem for Kansas City. Listen, their point differential is a minus. They're the only one in that division. Of course, they're 1-2. Everybody else has got a winning record.
And I'll give it up to you, and this is what I've learned. That division is a lot better than we thought. It's not Kansas City and everybody else.
No, it's not.
Absolutely not.
I think the main thing we've learned so far is there is a bunch of quarterbacks that are better than anybody knew because they were in absolute obscurity. Exhibit A, Matthew Stafford is damn good and has always been damn good. The only problem is you had no idea because he was playing for Detroit.
Right.
That dude can play and has always been able to play. Now you get him in that situation and that system with Sean McVay, all those weapons out in L.A., the Rams are good. And I wouldn't be shocked at all if we didn't just see the NFC championship game preview or maybe a divisional game preview last Sunday afternoon with the Bucks and the Rams. Those are two very good teams. And Stafford, I mean, there's no doubt right now if you had to stop the season, he's the MVP. Period, end of story.
Yeah.
And that dude can play. And he's always been very talented. But he's never really had the chance that he's got now. I think you could even see last night when he was on with Peyton and Eli how just relaxed, and it was like he looked like a Southern California dude already just because, you know, it's so easy. When you look at what they've got, their offensive line is good, all those weapons. I mean, he's like, how much fun is this? You mean I don't have to run for my life and just sling it up in the air and hope Megatron makes a play like I did for 10 years? This is cool. Oh, and we're just drumming people? Yeah, I like this a lot better than Detroit. So I think we've learned that. Teddy Bridgewater is another guy that was on a pretty decent trajectory until that just a horrific injury that he suffered. And now you're looking at him out at Denver. You know, yeah, Zach Wilson doesn't look very good, but I can tell you one thing. That Denver defense is awesome.
Yeah.
There's a reason why he didn't look very good against Denver. That defense is really good. I think there's a bunch of bad teams. I think that's what I've learned. There's way more bad ones than good ones, it feels like. You know, if you take away the West for both the AFC and the NFC, if you just take away the Western Division, boy, the rest of it's pretty terrible in a lot of spots. I mean, you mentioned Dallas being the favorite. They ought to quit football. They ought to quit playing football in Dallas if they don't win that division this year. Just stop playing.
Yeah, that
be done with it because they are far and away the best team.
Yeah,
it's not even close.
You know what was good about last night was Dallas did that with their defense, and they had a lot of guys on the sideline.
Yeah, I mean that should be the cakewalk of cakewalks.
Exactly. If they once they get healthier on that side of the ball, I mean they looked really good on that side of the ball. Imagine if they're really healthy.
Maybe the South is okay. In the NFC, Carolina. I don't know if we trust them yet.
Well, same thing. You know, you're holding your breath. Well, right. Are they or aren't they?
And then in the AFC, you know, there's – I don't know. It just seems like there's a bunch of bad teams. And some of the teams with good records, like Cincinnati, 2-1. Really? You really trust Cincinnati as a good team? Meh, probably not. But that's what I'm – and then also, the Chiefs are vulnerable. We talked about it in the preseason leading up to it. Would they, you know, how, and we've talked about it since Mahomes signed that giant contract. How quick will it take them to start kind of going the way of the Seahawks? You know, back when the Seahawks won the Super Bowl in, what, 2014, you couldn't figure out a way for them not to win about two or three of them. But the way is to pay your quarterback. And you have to. Don't get me wrong. You have to do it.
Yes.
But that's the way that you're – quote-unquote dynasty gets broken up when they take all the money that they can take and then you start losing people around you. And I think that's what we're starting to see in Kansas City, and that hasn't even really started yet when the you know, with the money kicking in big time. It hasn't even got there yet. So,
yeah,
you know, they're going to have to be really, really good at kind of drafting and also getting guys off the scrap heap for that outperform the money they're getting paid. So that's and plus that division is better than it has been. And so, you know, 1-2 in the previous couple years, you're tied for the top or just a game back or half a game back. You've got two teams 3-0 already in front of you.
Yeah.
So that'll be interesting to see how they can respond, if they can respond. Because even the Chargers at 2-1 and just beat you on your home field. Not a great start for Kansas City. All right, who's your top five?
I will go with number one, Rams. Number two, Bills. It got kind of muddy here. It's easy. There's only five undefeateds left, so it's easy to put all three and O teams up top. But no,
I ain't doing that.
No, I'm not. Packers number three. Raiders number 4 and Cardinals number 5.
We're fairly similar. I had the Rams 1, Bills 2. I've got Tampa 3. I still think Tampa's really
still
good.
Still a believer.
Oh, yeah. Raiders 4, and I've got Cleveland at 5. And then that group right behind them in no particular order, Cards, Cowboys, Broncos, Packers, and Titans behind there. You know,
there's consideration for all of them for me.
Yeah, me too. I could have put
even – I go with quality of wins and losses.
Even though the Raiders are 3-0, they were the one that I had the hardest time putting in here at 4.
Well, you know, going to overtime.
They've gone to overtime twice.
Twice.
But they have beaten the Ravens. Now, that Steelers win on the road doesn't look like much because, hell, the Bengals just did it.
Yeah.
So what does that matter?
Right.
You know, but able to get – and they look good when you watch them, I think, is the thing about it. And then the Browns looked really, really good, even though they were playing the Bears. You know, but they also – quality of loss at Arrowhead in the first game – in a game that really they had the lead most of, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But all those other teams will have their opportunities to move right up into that top five for sure. All right, bottom three.
Oh, man, you could make a tie for all three of them. The New York teams and the Giants and Jets and the Jags. Jags showed a little life, but it was against the Cards, and you just knew the Cards were going to break away and pull away, and they did. But nothing about those three impressed me. Nothing at all. Nothing. I mean, those are your cakewalk games. You hope they're next week on your schedule.
I've got Jets, Jags, and Bears.
Okay.
The Bears are god-awful. I mean, they are bad.
I can see the Jags beating the Bears. I can't see the Giants or Jets beating them.
Yeah, the Giants, you know, it doesn't help that they just lost to Atlanta. But yeah. They've actually, you can see a little bit of a glimmer of hope. You know, like the Washington game, they're right there. They really probably should have won that game against Washington last Thursday or two Thursdays ago. And then they were ahead of the Falcons the entire game until the very end. But another team that's 0-3, but I didn't even attempt to put on this list, is the Lions. The Lions have a little spunk about them.
Oh, sure.
I mean, they
I do like their coach.
I do too. I think that maybe that's part of it, just because Dan Campbell's so much fun. But I mean, they were getting drilled by the 49ers in the first game. They brought it all the way back to 41-33. I think it was like 38-10 at one point. And then they had the Ravens on the rope, should have beat them. It'll be a battle of suck, though, at Soldier Field this weekend with the Lions and Bears. Oh, my. See what I did there?
I saw what you did there.
Did you see?
Very good.
I literally just came up with that.
That's very
good. That wasn't written on my paper.
Unscripted moment.
A couple questions on the text line. One of them is, if Dak gets hurt, are the Cowboys done? Yes.
That's an easy answer, yes.
Yes, and that goes for a lot of other teams too.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just the nature of the game. But I will say this about that game last night. We really didn't hit on it much. But one, the Cowboys' defense looks better than mediocre. You know what's starting to look like brilliance as far as the draft game for the Cowboys?
Pearson? Who? What?
Taking CeeDee Lamb where you did because Trayvon Diggs was still available later.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
That's starting to look like draft brilliance because I think when you look at that draft from last year at 17 – CeeDee Lamb is going to end up being the best available player. Was then and will be now. And then you also get Trayvon Diggs later on in a position of need who's already becoming one of the better ones in the league, it feels like, just in 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that guy looks like a completely – from say, week 1 through 10 last year, and then you fast forward week 11 till now, he looks like a completely different guy. He's comfortable. He's out there making plays. I mean, how many? He had to pick 6 when Devontae Smith fell down. But how many other times was he knocking the ball away? Right there in perfect position for deflections. That dude looks like a good player. The Dallas defense looks completely different than it did last year. I can't say his name, but number 97, the guy from UCLA.
Yeah.
Whatever his name is.
Yeah, yeah.
He looks awesome as a rookie.
I can't say it either.
I can't say it. I heard the Cowboys radio guy last week driving home saying it over and over, and I still can't say it. But anyway, he was the third-round pick. He looks good. You know, Parsons looks fantastic.
I said Pearson. I had Cowboys on my mind. Parsons. Yes.
Parsons looks fantastic. And so that defense,
moving him on the edge is awesome.
Defense is coming right along.
Yes.
It's coming right along. Passes defended. Three passes defended and a pick for Trayvon Diggs.
You know who we can thank for that?
Who?
Tom Brady and the New England Patriots. For coming back and beating New England and beating Atlanta in the Super Bowl, and starting the road towards the Dan Quinn firing.
Yeah, I guess that's right.
And look where he is
now. He looks fine.
Yeah.
Offensively, you know, everyone knows.
Someone said that last night. I can't take credit for that. Someone said that on the broadcast last night.
Everyone thought that the Cowboys' offense is going to be good. It is.
Yeah.
Zeke looks refreshed. Tony Pollard still looks better.
The dual running back thing. Why are we arguing that Zeke isn't good enough because Parsons is getting carries? What? Not Parsons.
Pollard.
Pollard is getting carried. Why isn't it clear to us? It's a dual running back system.
Zeke ran hard last night, and he ran physical. That touchdown where he just ran the dude over into the end zone, that was good stuff. Dak looks completely in control of everything going on.
He looks comfortable.
He really does.
He's confident now. I think there's some question of, you need to come back from a horrific injury like that, of trusting your body. Throw that out the window. He looks comfortable.
He definitely has lost a step, or he's more cognizant of not getting hit than he was. You know, they ran that play where the kind of a naked bootleg, Philly sniffed it out, and he just laid down.
Yeah.
Which is fine with me. Second and 11 is way better than him standing on the sideline.
Yeah. Or not be able to stand on the sideline.
That's right.
Yeah.
What did you think about Jalen last night?
He's still – there's a long way to go.
I think he looks better.
He looks better, but there's more to work with. He has a long way to go.
Well, he needs some weapons because
he
my
does.
Gosh.
Yeah, we talk about personnel around quarterbacks. That's a thing too.
Yeah, put Dak on the Eagles
doesn't
and put Jalen on the Cowboys.
Doesn't help when Devontae Smith is falling down.
Yeah, that's a tough break.
You know, that's sure, the pass was a little bad, but if he stays on his feet, again, they said this last night, if Smith stays on his feet, he could at least try to defend that.
Sure.
You can't have your guy falling down on the ground like that. So, but there's promise, but I still think there's a long ways to go. I just hope we know how the history works in the Eagles in Philadelphia. If you don't win now or have success now, the fans want you out of there.
Yeah.
Coaches, players.
We'll see what they do. I mean, you can tell. Yeah, but the players aren't. You can tell the players like him.
No, I meant the fans. Yeah, I know what you're saying. I know what you're saying.
Did you see – so did you watch the broadcast or did you watch the Mannings?
But honestly, I got home by second half and watched just the broadcast.
There was a couple of really cool you know how I know the Manning deal is better than the regular broadcast?
How?
You know how? They actually made LeBron James seem likable.
Well, everybody likes the Mannings, so if the Mannings can vouch for a guy,
is there anybody that doesn't like Peyton Manning? I had this question asked to me last night. Is he 100%? Is his approval rating 100%? He seems like it. It doesn't seem like anybody doesn't like Peyton Manning.
Go ask some Gator fans from back in the mid-90s.
Yeah,
maybe.
I think even they like him now.
You think they've turned around and like him?
And then that was one. And then number two, Eli just fired the double birds right out. They had Chris Long on there, and you know, and right as he got on there, Peyton goes, "Hey, Chris, you know, as he played there in Philly at one point later on, he's like, yeah, those fans really loved Eli, the Philly fans, they loved him," and Eli said, "Yeah, it was great." You walk into the stadium, and he was kind of hesitant to do it, and Peyton's like, "Ah," because he actually kind of looked over and asked, "Is it okay?" And Peyton's like, yeah, sure. What was happening? And he goes, well, it's like 9-year-olds. Just give me the double birds. And he flies them both. And he's like, surely they could blur that out or something, like live TV.
Wow.
And so just
see it.
With the way our society is, unfortunately, it went to commercial. Then when it came back,
he had to apologize.
Eli had to apologize.
Jeez, give me a break.
And now they're not going to be able to. I don't know what their schedule is supposed to be, so I'm not saying this is why. But I know they're off until week 7 now.
Wow.
On their cats. They may not have been supposed to do them all, but listen, it is phenomenal. If you've ever wanted to watch football with Eli and Peyton, you get to. And listening to them, and on that throw where Smith fell down, they made the point, of course he's fell down, but Jalen's got to miss high and outside, so if something does happen, Devontae's still the only one that can catch
what's
it.
The old
and he missed low and in.
You throw it where only your guy can get it.
That's right. Yeah. It was really great insight. College football weekend. Some ups and some downs in this state anyway, but both teams 4-0 heading into October. So that early season hiccup for the Sooners hasn't occurred, at least in a loss. I know where it's occurred in losses for me, though. The Western Oklahoma Realty College pickup.
Oh, well.
Been having way too much. You know, it's one of those fool me once, shame on you, fool me twice, shame on me type of things. You keep thinking, okay, this is the week that it's going to, you know, explode for the Sooners, and it just has not. Speaking of the Western Oklahoma Realty College pick'em, 72 strong in this year's contest. Andy Peffer out on top with 24-16 record. That's a heck of a good record. 60% winners so far this season. Thank you to Tyler Harrison, Robbie Allen, and the group at Western Oklahoma Realty. People before property is their motto. They'll be able to help you out with any and all of your real estate needs. So college football weekend coming up. Sooners on the road at K-State. Oklahoma State and Baylor will tussle in Stillwater. A couple of teams inside the top 25, 19 and 21 in the AP poll. So here's a question. It's obvious that the Oklahoma offense has completely struggled since the first half of the opener against Tulane. They put 37 on the board in that opener against the Green Wave. Really could have been 50 because of a couple of field goals that should have, you know, that you could turn into touchdowns easily with turnovers that were created by the defense, short fields, but OU wasn't getting the ball moving. 37 points. Since then, that offense has gone 3-21-16 in games that count. I don't count Western Carolina. No offense to them, but come on. So in the 10 quarters since the first half against Tulane, the Sooners have scored 40 points. 3, 16, and 21. 40 in 10 quarters. I'm not great at the math, but I feel like that's 4 points a quarter. That is a lot different than what we're used to and accustomed to seeing at Oklahoma. So here's my question. In your pie chart, make me a pie chart of who is to blame for the deficiencies on the offense at Oklahoma.
You want me to start with the biggest piece of the pie or the smallest?
I want you to start with the biggest piece of the pie.
The biggest piece of the pie for me is at 60% would be the O-line / Coach Beadenbow. That is where I think if we're going to start talking about what needs to be fixed and changed, I think it's that. I really think that the O-line, when they go up against everybody else that from this point forward, should athletically be better, but schematically I think they're overthinking it, blocking schemes and stuff. Now listen, I'm not an offensive line coach, so I'm not going to pretend like I know what I'm talking about, but with anything in life and anything in sports, if something's not working, go back to basics, get simple, and let's see what athlete versus athlete can do. I think that's where it should start and go from there. Because it's not just Rattler, and we'll get to him. It's not just Rattler. I mean, look at the running backs having issues moving the ball. Stuff like that. So that's where I begin with is offensive line / Coach Beadenbow.
I've got
60%.
I've got O-line as well as the major culprit, but I don't have it that much of a percentage.
Okay.
I've got them at 40.
Okay.
40% for the offensive line. And specifically, a couple of spots. I think the center position has been a massive downgrade from what Creed Humphrey was to what is going on there now. Now,
I think we knew that going in anyway. Well, Creed Humphrey was a great player.
Okay, but then, I mean, if you'd have known, let me ask you this.
But I don't think we would think it would lead to issues like this.
Saying that, I mean, if we really did know, then neither one of us would have picked OU to win the national title.
That's a good point.
Nobody would if they, you know. And so I think you, with Conjul, is that it? Conjul, whatever, transferring in from Arizona. Maybe he was a little bit of a stopgap early before Andrew Rame could get his feet under him. You know, that guy hasn't really played center much. And he got destroyed the other night. I mean, everyone's going to remember, point back to that 4th-and-1, where he's 5 yards in the backfield, just right off the get-go.
Right.
The left tackle hasn't been very good. Anton Harrison has not been very good. Seems like he's getting ran around a bunch. Now, for the first time all year, they did insert Wanye Morris into the lineup.
I'm glad you brought that up. Somebody brought that up to me yesterday.
He was inserted, and quite honestly, you wonder why it took so long. Maybe it was scheme, having trouble picking up the calls or the scheme or what have you, but I think it got to the point where it's, okay, whatever, he's athletic. The guy was second-team All-SEC last year, and you're telling me he can't play for Oklahoma on that line?
Right.
And I think maybe that's what finally the light bulbs went off in the heads of either Beedenbo or Riley or whoever and said, listen, I don't care if he knows how to do it or not. He can clearly block somebody because of his accolades from last year as what, a redshirt or a true freshman. So
did you see the stat line, what he did when he was in the game?
No.
Okay, first possession. He was in for 3 possessions there at the end of the game. First possession, 3 and out. Second possession, 16 plays, 62 yards that led to a field goal, game-tying field goal.
And then the winner.
Third possession, 14 plays, 80 yards, field goal to win.
Yeah. So
I'm not saying that's the answer, but, it's, you know, why hasn't he been in there earlier?
It doesn't hurt. And I think a lot of it is picking up the calls, adjusting to the new verbiage or whatever. But at some point, you just need to let your athletes go play. And I think maybe that's on the road to fixing it, but I don't know if that's the entire thing. Okay, so if you've got 60% O-line, what's next?
25% is Rattler and company.
Okay.
Okay. Rattler for the obvious reasons. We don't need to beat a dead horse on that one. I mentioned the running backs. There's times when, you know, the play calling, and that's going to go to my final percentage, but – you know, with Eric Gray going right up the middle, that's not what he does. But there's times like, Kennedy Brooks, where have you been? And I'm thinking, man, where have you been? And so that's why I say Rattler and company. And again, I, without watching film and slowing it down and breaking it down, but sometimes I'm thinking, is it A, Rattler not able to get enough time to allow his wide receivers to run their routes and get open? Or B, are the wide receivers simply just not getting open that forces Rattler to try to scramble and make something happen? So I that's where it starts with the QB taking the snaps and the rest of the guys. In this order, Rattler, running backs, probably O-line, then wide receivers. But I'll start with 25%. I'll just sum it up with Rattler and company.
Okay, so I had 40 O-line. I've got 30 Rattler.
Okay.
And it's not necessarily just – the play on the field. I think it's everything that surrounds what's going on with him. I think the NIL is a problem, because when you think, okay, when you ask the question, what has changed? That's about it.
Mm-hmm.
Not a lot else has changed from a year ago to now. And so I think what you've got there is just the persona of Rattler has overtaken the player a little bit, and the too cool for school mentality just isn't, you know, and people are going to turn on him. I actually think when we look ahead to Saturday, I think it is a blessing for this game to be on the road. I really do. Because if there were struggles early against Kansas State and he was at home, the chorus of boos are just going to get louder and louder. So this is a chance for maybe this team to go on the road, be by themselves, galvanized together before heading down to the Cotton Bowl. I think this is a really fortunate break for OU that they're going to Manhattan as opposed to playing that game in Norman. But I just think Rattler encompassing everything that's going on with him is just – it's a huge problem, but it's just a little bit less of a problem than the O-line. So I have him at 30%, O-line at 40%. What do you got next?
My final 15% is Coach Riley. He's the head coach. It's going to fall on him. You know, does he need to make that decision of just sitting Rattler for a couple of possessions, making changes to fix this offense to where it's more like the offense that OU fans are used to seeing? It all starts with him. And sometimes I see maybe stubbornness on the sideline. We're like, this is the game plan. We're sticking with it. And his unwillingness to change the game plan on the fly, that falls on him. So out of everything we talked about, he is the head coach. He's always going to get a piece of this pie.
Yeah, I've got him at 20. So 40, 30, and then 20. I think it's stubbornness. I also think it's arrogance. I said that yesterday to Jim. I think it's arrogance because of the success he's had in the past. And rightfully so. Listen, I'm not saying that arrogance is a bad thing, because when things are going good, it's a great thing.
Mm-hmm.
And it instills a different level of confidence maybe than some others have. But right now, it's arrogance. And so that means you're done. I have 10% more left to dole out, and it's the running backs. But it's not because of how they performed. I don't think the running back 10% is either one of those guys' fault. It's everybody else that got kicked off the team or didn't make their grade.
That's a good point.
And I think that, you know, you mentioned like Eric Gray, and I heard Jim talking about it yesterday too. Why is he running up the middle? Well, he has to, because you can't just have Gray in the game to catch swing passes and Kennedy Brooks to run it up the middle, because I can figure that out.
Everybody's going to know that. Yeah.
I'm not a defensive coordinator at a D1 school, and I can figure that out. And so you have to, you're making guys do things that they're not great at. And if you had all those other, that other complement of depth, scholarship depth at the running back spot, then all of a sudden, you know what you hadn't seen all year? Both of them on the field together. And I promise you that was part of the game plan coming in before all the trouble started at the running back spot for OU, was be able to have both those guys in the backfield. Then you don't know what they're going to do. Maybe Gray slips out for a pass. Maybe he, you know, there's so many more options available to you, but it's not happening. And then if you want to put the H-backs into the running back, where have they been? Jeremiah Hall, not much from him. Braden Willis, does he even play anymore? You know, those guys have just, and that has been a staple of Lincoln Riley since he's been here, with all those different guys, the Flowers, the Halls, all of those guys. You know, even back to Millard, I realize he wasn't here then, but, you know, that's been a position of strength for Oklahoma to use in the passing game and the running game, and we haven't seen those guys really perform hardly at all. So the running backs have been a problem, but I think it's a lot more because of what happened in the offseason than it is just those guys' ability to run the football, if that makes sense. So lots of problems, and I'm not sure that they're fixable. You know, that's the next question. Can they be fixed? Does this have to kind of water this thing down to just simple concepts for either the O-line or Rattler to be able to be successful?
I think it can be fixed. I do. But it goes back to what I said about the offensive line. I think they kind of need to just make it a little bit more simpler, because I think athletically going up against the rest of the defensive lines in this conference, they have recruited well. OU has.
Now, on
paper, I know.
Yeah.
Athletically, that's what I'm saying. Yeah. Size-wise, if you get back to simpler things, I wonder if Biedenboe, he was so used to these dominant offensive lines that he's had, and then he's trying to continue the same schematics that he had with those guys, with these guys. Well, that's not going to work with a lot of first-year starters.
Yeah, but that's the problem. It's not a lot of first-year starters.
Well, that's
Marquise Hayes and Tyrese Robinson have been there forever.
At center,
and
though,
they're still getting their butts whipped.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a mess right now. And I think part of it is, like, for instance, like Robinson, he's not a tackle. He's a guard, but he's playing tackle because they don't have anybody play guard. You know what I mean? And they're running them all around. And I just don't think the combination has been right yet. And that's the question, will it ever be? I mean, because Chris Murray came in here as a center. Now he's playing guard to make way for a young guy. Is that the right choice? Or do you have a tackle that can get out there so that Murray can be the center, Robinson can be the right guard, and then you have a right tackle? You know, they fiddled around. They haven't found the right combination yet. Maybe Wanya Morris helps if he can solidify the left tackle. And then you can move – what if Harrison can play right tackle instead of left? You know, there's guys that are like that that can only play, you know, one side or the other. But so far, it just hasn't worked like we thought it was going to offensively. Now, where it did start to work, up in Stillwater, Spencer Sanders was fantastic. And it looked like a totally different team. Like maybe a totally different guy was calling plays than what it looked like even in the win at Boise.
Yeah.
He goes from throwing 13 passes to 34, and if the game wouldn't have got out of hand in the first half, it may have been more than that. It's amazing how, for no reason, that leap happened. Because there was nothing that we've seen out of Sanders so far that would have foreshadowed, hey, watch this. I'm going to play the best game I've ever played in OSU uniform against Kansas State. But that's about what he did. And so is Gundy the one calling the plays? Surely Tay Martin doesn't make that much difference. He's not Jerry Rice. Or was it just one of those, is this kind of a role player in the NFL? Meaning, or in the NBA, I'm sorry. You know, we see that in the playoffs where the role players play so much better at home than they do on the road. You know, those bench guys in the NBA playoffs.
Right.
Is there something to do with that with Sanders? Even though he's laid eggs at home too. But, man, that guy looked good. And that team looked good. And it was just like, man, making that out of Boise by the skin of their teeth. And all of a sudden, they were loaded for bear and just whipped up on Kansas State from the very beginning.
I don't mean to downplay what OSU did, but was it a Kansas State team limping in? At one point, they went to their third-string quarterback, did they not?
The quarterback didn't have a damn thing to do with Sanders running up and down the field.
I understand that, but when you get a good start like that, you're able to feel comfortable, especially at home. So, but no, I mean, can he continue to do it? That's my big question about Sanders. We've seen him have nice games and then turn around and lay an egg the next game or next two games or whatever. So I want to see him continue to do it. You know, will this springboard him to better confidence for the rest of the season? And next week's going to be a huge test. Baylor's no joke.
Yeah, I don't think Baylor's any good. OSU should win that game and then get a week off, and we'll see what Texas looks like after TCU and down in the Red River rivalry. OSU so far looks in like a really good spot to be right in the mix to play in that Big 12 title game. They really do. For defense, they're as good a defensive team as there is in the conference. That's going to keep them in games. And then seeing a little explosion on the offensive side, can't do anything but instill some confidence if you're an OSU fan, I think. Now, who's your top 10 in college football?
It's not too dramatic. Other than number one, I think Georgia's really, really good, and I think I got them number one. Alabama, close number two. Oregon, Penn State, Iowa, kind of the same as the AP, OU. Notre Dame, followed by Arkansas. You can almost flip these. No, you know what? I'm going to flip these. Make it Notre Dame, Ole Miss, Arkansas, and then Cincinnati.
I've got Bama, Georgia, Oregon, Penn State. I've got Arkansas fifth. Iowa sixth, OU seven, Notre Dame eight, Ole Miss nine, and Florida 10.
Got a one loss. Did you say Cincinnati?
No.
Kind of hard to believe in them, right?
No. Now, if they win this one, they'll fly right in there.
Sure.
And this, I was going to get to this later in the week, but I'll ask you right now.
I'm already kind of faulting Arkansas because they played Georgia.
Yeah, you already moved them down for losing.
I'm saying? Like, well, okay, I'll tip my cap. You beat A&M.
And beat Texas, which looks like a heck of a lot better win than you did.
Yeah, and beat Texas. Arkansas's better. They're not cellar dwellers anymore. But now let's see if they're – is anyone really believing they're going to beat Georgia?
No.
Not really.
And here's the deal. Here's the problem for Arkansas. Even if they do somehow beat Georgia, right? Let's just say they do. You know what else they've got on that schedule? You know where they go next week?
Is it Bama?
Ole Miss.
Oh, see.
Then they host Auburn. Then they get a couple of normal games. Then they go to LSU. Then they go to Bama.
Yep.
Ouch.
Yep. Well, LSU, I think, is doable.
Maybe. After all that.
But, no, that was.
Having Georgia on your schedule from the East right now was such a tough break. There's lots of years where Georgia would be kind of, they're pretty good. This isn't one of those.
But if this was in Arkansas,
they ain't beating Georgia.
It'd be, what is it, a 17, 10 and a half?
Something like that.
Something like that.
17 and a half, maybe. They ain't beating Georgia. No. Sorry. Sorry, Hogs. Sorry, Paul. Man, it's too bad Paul's not here to tell us about it. he had to sit here for Ophirs.
Forever.
Yeah. Who's the Heisman leader in your mind?
Bryce Young and everybody else.
Really?
Yep.
What about Matt Corral?
No.
Why not?
He doesn't play at Alabama.
So what happens when he goes into Alabama and torches their heinies this week? Then what happens?
In a loss?
Who knows?
It's Bryce Young and
everybody. Can Matt Corral win the Heisman this week?
If he torches him in a win, yes. He can vault himself up to the top of the standings.
Oh, I think he's already there, and he'll create a huge lead. Now, that doesn't mean he wins it, but he could win it this weekend. But he could still lose it further down the road. But he's got a chance.
I think what helmet you wear matters a lot.
He's got a chance. And their schedule isn't near as daunting as Arkansas's. They get Tennessee
Kiffin's
and Vanderbilt.
Last year in Ole Miss, you think he gets a bigger job, or can he go any bigger than what he's got right now?
Wonder if he wants to. You know where he'd look good?
His attitude fits perfectly in Oxford.
He'd be great at USC. Oh, he's been there before.
Nah.
Would they ever do it again?
No.
Should they? As we mentioned yesterday, the OSSAA released the Class A and B fast pitch and fall baseball regional assignments. Bunch of teams around the area are in here. Let's see. Bingeroni, number one. They're hosting. A little bit further out here. There we are. Navajo. So Navajo will host. They've got Snyder, Velma, Alma, and Hydro Weekly are the other game in that one. These are all double elimination, four-team brackets with one participant going to state. So you have to win. There's eight regionals in softball, in fast-pitch softball, so you have to win your regional in order to go to state. Shattuck and Laverne will play. And then Moreland and Pioneer Pleasant Vale are also in that regional. And then over at Arapahoe, Arapahoe gets Sealing. And then Sterling and Canute are also in that four-team regional. A bunch of teams from around this area with a chance to advance into the Class A fast-pitch state tournament. You know anything about any of them?
Other than the town I live in, not really. I know Bingeroni's really good.
Yeah, it seems like they're really good every year.
They're really, really good. Of course, those east side, southeast side of the state
area.
School, that area, you know, you're always going to get athletes out of them. So you get the usual suspects. From the contest that I've seen between Canute and Arapahoe, I could see that region being an absolute dogfight.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people would think Canute should host a region, but they weren't ranked high enough. And Arapahoe, that when they play each other, you could see a 3-1, 2-1, 4-3 type of ball game. And it just seems like they're just both teams are kind of rolling right now.
So wonder,
I can see them being really that being a dogfight, like I said.
I wonder about Sealing.
Yeah, I mean, then you talk about athletes.
Reason I ask that is because I know they played Elk City yesterday, and Elk City's been on an absolute roll. And it was 3-2.
There you go.
So is there pitching there? You know, it's one of those deals where, you know, sometimes
without
the best,
knowing that Elk play.
I don't know.
I you know what I mean?
I just know they got an extra game.
Right.
Yeah, you wonder. That one, Shattuck, Laverne, Moreland, Pioneer, all up there together. Then in Class B, Kiba Sickles is hosting. They've got Cimarron, Scheidler, and Asher is the other game. Speaking of that area, there's old Asher again. Hammond's hosting. They've got Leedy. And then Fort Cobb, Broxton, and Duke. That's a Wednesday, Thursday. Regional. And is that it for Class B? Nope, Arnett. I knew there was somebody else. Arnett and Buffalo, and then the other two are the hyphen schools. Mulhall, Orlando, and Kremlin Hillsdale. Then in baseball, Canute hosting in Class A. Trojans gets Hydro Eakley, and then Calera and Dale are the other two. Now, here's the deal about fall baseball. Two of the four will head to state. So somebody's going to win the first two games, boom, they're done. And then there will be, you know, some loser's bracket games getting back to a game to go to the state tournament. So two of the four between Canute, Hydro Weekly, Calera, and Dale will go.
Seems.
Sure looks like Dale
sure
and Canute,
like Canute
to me.
Canute and Dale played two times or three times this year. Canute winning every time they played, but now it matters. Not sure what happened to Canute last night. They played Lakeba Sickles and got beat pretty good. Makes me wonder again, did they – I haven't looked at the box score.
Set up pitching and all that kind
of
stuff.
Yeah, just kind of just rotate in every inning. See, you know, I don't know. But could be a fun one. And that's one of those revised times.
Yeah, it's down to a noon.
Noon.
For Thursday.
At noon, 2 and 4.
Visai will head to Silo. It'll be Silo and Sterling on one game. Visai will play Wright City. Down there at Silo in Class A. Class B. This one will say revised once we get to the leady one. Fort Cobb's hosting. They've got Whitesboro, Granite, and Moss are the other two there. And then the revised that we got sent to us up at Leedy. It'll be Leedy and Hammond at 2 o'clock, but that'll be Wednesday. 2 o'clock Wednesday for Leedy and Hammond. New Lima and Lakeba Sickles is at 4 o'clock on Wednesday. So somebody, Wednesday evening, somebody will be in the state tournament from that regional.
It's true.
As the winners of those two games will play, and the winner of that will go to state. So Leedy, Hammond, New Lima, and Lakeba Sickles, that has been revised to a Wednesday-Thursday regional as opposed to the Thursday-Friday as it was originally scheduled. So Wednesday and Thursday for Leedy, Hammond, New Lima, and Lakeba Sickles. So good stuff. By the time the weekend's over, I'm sure we'll have a ton of teams from out in this area that'll be advancing on to try to win a gold ball in fast pitch and also fall baseball.
Always have good representation from all schools out here. So, you know, we'll have, I'm sure we'll have that again. And we might be busy.
There you go. Good stuff.
Hopefully they get this in without any delays.
Yeah, I know. Everybody wants the rain. Everybody needs the rain. But it's like, man, really? Why can't it rain over the weekend before this starts?
Yeah.
All right, everybody have a great Tuesday. We'll be back tomorrow with another edition of the Skinny on Sports.
You've been listening to the Skinny on Sports podcast with Aaron Cowan. Be sure to hit that subscribe button to get alerts of when the latest podcast is available. Thanks for listening.
That ball is blistered to right. Way.